This podcast is Challenging Opinions and is presented by William Campbell.
Thank you for downloading the Challenging Opinions podcast for May 15th, 2017. In this podcast, I've got part one of my interview with Rebecca Lemke. She's the author of the forthcoming book, The Scarlet Virgins, about her life inside the purity movement and how it still influences her life. Enjoy the interview.
Challenging Opinions is the podcast where ideas are tested. Whether you are left or right, conservative or progressive, devout or skeptic, what matters is the strength of your argument, not the strength of your voice.
I've been looking at the news coming out of the White House and thinking about something that the alt-right blogger Vox Day predicted about the way that the news media would report goings-on in the Trump administration. Recently, we've had the firing of FBI Director James Comey. Before that, we've had the reported rivalry between Jared Kushner and Steve Bannon, the firing of Michael Flynn, and if I was Sean Spicer, I wouldn't be making any long-term career plans just yet.
They're going to have so much turnover in that cabinet. The media is not going to know what to do, because you know they're going to be talking about the Trump administration being in disarray constantly. Because they don't understand what's going on. What's going on is what you described. You know, he puts things in place, and if it doesn't work, you know, like with Chris Christie, he was going to put Chris Christie in place. Mm-hmm. He realized it wasn't working, and he canned him before he actually made the announcement that he was going to go with him.
I actually sort of agree with Vox Day there. That turbulence is not a sign of failure, and that trying things and dropping them quickly if they don't work is a good management strategy. People can laugh at Trump steaks and Trump vodka, but Trump is rich. Sure, he tried out a lot of businesses that didn't work, but on the whole, he ended up way ahead. One of the reasons he's still rich was that he didn't cleave on to failing businesses, and that's a good strategy. Nobody can expect to never make a mistake, but if you're the sort of person to recognize when you're doing something wrong and stop, then you're more likely to be successful in the long run. But hang on. Sure, giving up on lost causes is a good idea. It reduces losses. But just reducing losses isn't enough. If you want to be successful, you have to also have some actual wins. Trump made big promises during the election campaign. That was one of the reasons he won. Other politicians were nervous to make big promises because their political experience told them to be cautious in what they promised. Trump promised big, not just his specifics like the wall, but other more implied ones like bringing work back to the Rust Belt from China or Mexico or wherever. He wasn't really clear. There are going to be a lot of very annoyed people if those promises don't follow through. The message from the White House is that all these personnel stories are just sideshows. Maybe they are, but if Trump doesn't put on a performance on the main stage, that might not be enough of a line to tell for too much longer.
Do you agree? Do you disagree? If you want your point of view heard, email podcast@challengingopinions.com and say what you think.
On the line now, I have Rebecca Lemke. She is the author of the forthcoming book, The Scarlet Virgins, which is about her experience with the purity culture. For people who don't know Rebecca, tell me, what is the purity culture?
So purity culture has two different facets. One is the secular facet that initially started it off, and that was due to high teen pregnancy rate. The second facet is the Christian aspects of purity culture, which in my experience turned legalistic. So essentially the two differences between those is one was about teen pregnancy rate initially, and it taught to stay virgin before you were married. The second one had some additional rules that included not hugging before you got married, not kissing before you got married, not holding hands before you got married. And it also saw previous relationships as emotional STDs to bring into your marriage.
Oh, slow that down, that one down a little bit. When you say previous relationships, then because it is expected that you're not having sex, that would mean just any teenage boyfriend, girlfriend that you don't end up marrying?
It actually isn't even that far. It's actually just if you had a crush on somebody else.
And this is called an emotional STD. That's strong language.
Yes, that is. They never directly called it that, but many people who grew up like me have called it that because that's the way they treated it. It was that serious.
Uh-huh. And who are they?
The thought leaders of the movement, there's several, and I don't want to, you know, name drop a whole bunch of them, but Joshua Harris and his book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, was heavily influencing our homeschool group, in addition to Bill Gothard, who never really got into purity culture per se, but he endorsed segregation of men and women to a certain degree as youth. He had this kind of camp that he ran, and there was a lot of rules for how men and women should interact, and they couldn't be alone even if they were outside talking or anything like that.
And to what degree did you follow this? I should say, now that you're married, you have obviously grown up in to a certain degree in this culture. Give us the short version of how you adhered or didn't adhere to those rules.
So my husband and I were kind of rebellious, I guess, towards that. It wasn't that we were rebellious. It's just that we noted that physical and emotional relationships between humans, especially romantic ones, usually progress on a physical level and an emotional level. And usually that progression happens at the same time. So when we basically decided we were getting married before we started dating, mm-hmm. because of how serious we saw, you know, this relationship as. We were like, okay, if this is our one relationship, because we had both had previous crushes that took an extreme emotional toll on us, where it didn't work out and we were absolutely devastated because, well, now we have an emotional STD, basically. Mm-hmm. So we went into our relationship going, I'm not sure this whole purity culture thing is quite correct, but we do want to wait until we get married. So here's what we're going to do. And we basically kind of plotted out a very vague timeline of, okay, we're going to start kissing on the cheek here or kissing on the forehead here. We're going to start holding hands, you know, right off the bat when we start dating. We're going to maybe kiss before the wedding. We're not sure about that yet. And that's how we moved forward when we started dating. And then once we got engaged, maybe a little bit before, we decided, you know what, I don't think kissing is going to kill us. Uh-huh. And so we went forward with that. But and then we waited until the wedding to have sex. And that presented some challenges, actually, which they don't tell you about when they talk about, you know, waiting and all of that.
Go on, enlighten us.
Well, a lot of purity culture kind of lends itself to emotional suppression, mm-hmm. and suppression of a sexual identity too, even if you're not one of the more minority sexual orientations. And so you learn that you're a sexual person, this is bad, you should wait. And there's never really, I mean, for some people there is, but there's never really a sexuality is good ever. And so you grow up and you go, okay. And so a lot of us would like have panic attacks when we realized we had a crush on somebody. And we would also end up, you know, having different autoimmune disorders actually pop up because of the emotional suppression of trying to suppress a crush on somebody, mm-hmm. to where, you know, I remember being so incredibly frustrated because I kept having feelings for somebody.
What age?
I was really young when I got my first crush, and he was the only crush I had up until my husband. So I think when they taught us to suppress everything, I was around 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. I was fairly young, and I did develop some autoimmune issues over it. When I ended up going to counseling later on, my counselor was like, this sounds like a cult. I'm sorry, it does.
I want to go into the wider issue in a minute. But first of all, to the extent that you're willing to say, can you tell me what age were you when you got married? How do you feel you're getting on with your husband? How do you think it's all worked out for you?
Yeah, so I was 18 when I got married, which is very, very different here in the U.S. Our age of marriage, I think for women, it's like the average is 26 these days. So we got married young for a couple different reasons, but mostly because we didn't want to tempt ourselves further. But we got married when I was 18. Now we just passed our third anniversary on May 3rd.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We have a 2-year-old son. He just turned 2 on the 29th of April. So we had a week of birthdays and anniversaries. But so we've been married about 3 years now. And obviously, we got pregnant about 3 months into our marriage. Mm-hmm. And by that point, we hadn't really figured out sex yet. And I know that sounds absolutely horrible because who doesn't know how that all works? But I didn't know my own anatomy. I wasn't prepared for his anatomy, and I didn't really understand any of the physiology or the process behind it, because while my mom had tried to do a little bit of sex education, it wasn't really to the degree that I needed. Mm-hmm. I had tried to ignore it because I was like, well, I've been told that this is bad, so I'm just going to wait until the wedding and ask her then. So that was kind of my fault, but basically, by the time we actually kind of figured out how to do things, we got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so that became a huge, huge difficulty for me because in purity culture, some people will teach you that women's internal exams, pelvic exams, mm-hmm. are adultery if you're not married. And fornication if you are married, so you have to have routine pelvic exams when you're pregnant. So I went in to marriage. We finally got stuff straightened out for the most part. I was still emotionally traumatized, but I could get through it. And then I got pregnant and was told, okay, you have to have pelvic exams going forward for the next 9 months. And I broke down really bad. For as much as everybody tried to convince me that it was okay, that it was necessary, of course I was going to do what was best for my baby, and I had a high risk pregnancy for the most part, so I had to. It was still, I'm being violated, I can't do anything about it, and this is not only violating my personal boundaries, but it's also making me impure, even though I waited until we got married.
Can I ask, have you had a daughter or a son?
It's a son.
Okay, congratulations. I guess you may have more kids in the future. You might have a daughter. Do you think you would bring up any, particularly girls that you might have, to have the same set of beliefs that you have, or would it differ in any way?
I think it would differ in that my husband and I are kind of unique in that we can say we waited, and I think that would probably, for all of our kids, be a huge impact on them. Like, mom and dad actually did this, so it's not impossible. But I really feel strongly about, you know, I would teach them, you know, this is a good thing. There's, you know, just physical reasons why it's a good thing to wait. But if something happens and you don't, we still love you. And, it's going to be okay. Like, it's not going to be your identity now, is that you had sex before you got married. That's not your identity. That never should have been an identity for anybody. And just kind of approach it that way. Like, mm-hmm. this is what your father and I would like. But if this does not happen, this does not define you, and all that sort of thing.
Okay. I want to broaden it out a little bit. And clearly people have a religious commitment in terms of sex before marriage. In the United States and in pretty much all other developed countries, regardless of the level of religiosity, the proportion of people who do what you did is minuscule. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And I'm just wondering, and you've obviously, which I think is quite shocking, talked about having autoimmune diseases. And for people who don't know, this is perhaps a physical expression of psychological, I don't want to use the word trauma, but psychological pressure, at least, which expresses itself in various terms. It's more frequently seen in teenage girls than any other demographic group, but it can include chronic fatigue and inability to resist other minor illnesses. But I just want to, and to me that seems quite extreme, but I just want to look at some other effects of that. First of all, as we noted, only a tiny proportion of the population, however many intend to fulfill that, only a tiny proportion of the population are virgins until they get married. Do you think it's possible that the unrealistic aspiration to that can be more harmful?
I think that it's not necessarily an unrealistic expectation, but it could be for the way we have marriage set up currently. In that the marriage age here is 18, when for previous generations, both my sets of grandparents got married 16, 17. Mm-hmm. So I think that may be a factor. I think that also the just culture at large also lends itself to being harder to make and keep that decision, because it's, the culture here is so sex focused. You turn on the TV and there's a bunch of ads that are basically selling sex. Even if you are homeschooled, a lot of people have public school friends. And once somebody finds out that you've made that decision, they will do everything in their power. And I think it's subconsciously, but they will, to kind of, almost emotionally traumatize you by trying to tell you information.
Yeah. But I'm thinking, I mean, these rules come from essentially Iron Age religious documents when life expectancy was far, far shorter. Somebody who was over 30 years of age was really quite old. Mm-hmm. Nutrition was quite poor, which meant that girls didn't begin to menstruate until they were their mid-teens. It would not have been unusual for a girl to be 14 or 15 before she had puberty. And within a year or so of that, it would be likely that she would be married. These days, because of improved nutrition and some other reasons, puberty tends to be much earlier, maybe 11, 12. Mm-hmm. As you said, the typical marriage age is, I think for women, the average age of first marriage is 26. So
yeah,
that's 15 years or more of sexual maturity that people are expected to, to do nothing.
Yes.
That's just entirely unreasonable, isn't it?
I feel like it is, and that's part of the reason for my decision to get married as soon as possible. I've turned that over in my head so many times, I'm not going to say that I have an answer for that. For people who do want to wait but are facing like very, very long time of waiting, that's so hard. That is so hard. My husband and I had problems waiting. It was very difficult for us, and we only waited 2 years. Mm-hmm. I absolutely see that as very hindering to the ideal and all of that stuff. And I feel bad for people who actually do genuinely want to on their own and feel like they can't because of that long wait.
And I'm disturbed a little bit by some of the ideas that are embedded in the language of the purity movement. For a start, the word purity and this kind of phrase of stay pure until you get married. Does that mean you're not pure once you've got married?
That is a very good question.
And you can hear Rebecca's answer to that question in next week's podcast when I continue this interview. That's released on Monday, May 22nd. Don't forget to download that.
Never miss a show. You can subscribe to the podcast for free using iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or any other podcast software or app. See challengingopinions.com/subscribe for details.
That's all for the Challenging Opinions podcast, published on May 15th, 2017. I have links in the show notes to some of the authors and writings that Rebecca mentions influenced her and the Purity Movement. Do you know someone I should interview? What topics should I be covering? I'd be really interested to hear your feedback. If you like the podcast, there's one thing you can do that would really help other people to find it. Go on iTunes, give the podcast a rating, and write a short review. There's a link on the website directly to the iTunes page. Also, please like the show on Facebook. On Twitter, you can follow the show at ChallengingO. And most importantly, subscribe to the show for free. You can use iTunes if you're an Apple person, or Google Play Music if you're on Android. And there's also an RSS feed if you use that. And I know that not everybody uses podcast software, so if you just listen on the website, I have a new way for you to follow the show. You can enter your email address and get a simple email with a link to listen each time a new show goes online. Zero spam, I promise. You can find all of that or get in touch with me at www.challengingopinions.com. Coming on Wednesday, that's May 17th, I'll have an interview with Ben Orlin, who's the author of the Maths with Bad Drawings blog. The Challenging Opinions podcast is produced and presented by me, William Campbell. Thank you for listening.